with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins, which is Exodus chapter 6, or Shemot chapter 6. Not the first couple of verses, but essentially right after that. And it starts in, well, depending upon what you're looking at, the Hebrew version or not, verse 2. And it says, "And spoke Yahuwah unto Moshe, Yadaber Elohim al Moshe." And what did he say? "And he said unto him, Ani Yahuwah." All right, now that's kind of where it begins, and it's also where the last one ends. And the unique words here really start in verse 3. So again, it's verse 2 in the Hebrew Bibles, verse 3 in the English Bibles, where it says, "Vayera al Abraham, and I appeared unto al Abraham." Oh, "and also unto Isaac and unto Yaakov. And by my name I was known El Shaddai." It gets rendered in the English as God Almighty, but I like El Shaddai better, the All-Sufficient One. And he says, "But by my name Yahuwah, I did not," at that point anyway, "make myself known to them." Now, we know the name appears in Scripture prior to this, and there's even some indication and some discussion that probably the name might have been familiar to Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, but not in the sense that it is being made clear now, and that's the key that we're going to see throughout here. It's Ani Yahuwah over and over again. They are going to get a firsthand understanding of what that means and of his character and the importance of that name in that context. And that, of course, is going to be one of the, one of those phrases that's going to appear over and over and over again in Scripture, Ani Yahuwah, and it's one of those things that gets changed over and over again to hide the real importance and meaning of all of that. Now, the next couple of verses go on to give us more background and things that we will get used to hearing over again as well. "I've established also my covenant with them to give them," meaning them and their descendants, "the land of Canaan, the land of their sojournings, where they sojourned. And moreover, I have not been, I have been listening, haven't been ignoring the children, the groanings in particular, the children of Israel, whom the people of Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, keep in bondage. And I have remembered my covenant." And that word there in Hebrew is, the root word anyway, is zakar. "I have called to mind." I think one of the things that English speakers have trouble with is this idea of remembering my covenant. Sounds like he forgot it, and that's not what it's saying at all. It's always been something that he was aware of, but now it's time, and now it's being called to mind. "So therefore," he says, "I say unto the children, the B'nai Israel," and verse 6 here is one of these places that's kind of famous. It shows up at Pesach. You'll see it in a number of the traditions and customs. But certainly this is something that the Hebrew scholars will point to and say, very key verse. There are five places in here where it essentially says, "I will." Starting, of course, with the same words we just talked about. Ani Yahuwah. I am Yahuwah. And I will, number one, "I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians." And number two, "I will deliver you from their bondage. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. And I will take you." And that word there literally is lechak. It's the same word as when a husband takes a wife. "I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you an Elohim, and you shall know that Ani Yahuwah Eloheka, I am Yahuwah your El, Elohekim, all of y'all." It's the you all form in the Hebrew, the plural grouping. "And it is he who," again, "brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians." And then we get another "I will" too. "Then I will bring you into the land which I lifted up my hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. To you I will give it as a heritage." Ani Yahuwah. Now, Moshe spoke all of this to the children of Israel. But this is kind of fascinating, and I spent a lot of time talking about it in the Come Out of Her My People show this week. I think it's something that maybe we ought to pay more attention to. He spoke all of this to the children of Israel, but they didn't listen. Well, actually, it says they didn't hearken. They didn't shamar. They didn't hear and obey. And it gives us at least their excuse because of impatience of spirit and for the fact of their cruel bondage. So for these reasons, they didn't listen. And it's always, it's kind of fascinating to see how many places in Scripture where it says, tell them such and such. And we're going to see that with Pharaoh too. And they're not going to listen. But we give them the warning anyway. Right? With Amos in chapter 4, you see, for Yahuwah does nothing but what first he says, I declare my intentions to my servants, the prophets. You see other references, including in the apostolic writings, to people who are without excuse. Why? Because whether they were listening or not, they have been given fair warning. Arguably, the same thing goes for Pharaoh, and that's going to be one of the themes we're going to talk about this week. So now listen to verse 11. Go in, it says, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Mitzrayim, and let him be told that he will let the children of Israel go out of his land. Well, Moshe did as he was commanded. He spoke before Yahuwah, but he's going to ask a question. And he's hearkening back to what we just talked about. Look, the children of Israel, they haven't hearkened to me yet. Then how is Pharaoh going to hear me, for crying out loud, I who am of uncircumcised lips? So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Aaron. And remember, this is not the first time we've seen this. Aaron is going to be a spokesperson. He gave them a charge unto the children of Israel and unto Pharaoh to bring the children up out of the land of Egypt. And these, it says, then are the heads of their father's houses. And they go through one by one. I won't read them all. The sons of Reuben, and he's the firstborn of Israel, lists them. Then the sons of Simeon, then Levi. And they are, of course, important in this story. Gershon, Libni, Shimei, according to their families, Kohath, Merari. And Merari's son, Abram, took Jochebed. Amram, rather, took Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife, his aunt, and she bore Moshe and Aaron. And then it tells us how old Amram was, 137 years when he died. So we get a specific understanding here about the sons of Levi and all of the rest of them kind of in order. We're also told that Aaron took a woman named Elisheba, daughter of Amminadab, sister of Nachshon, to wife, and she bore him 4 sons. Nadab, Abihu, we're going to find out in a few weeks what happens to them, as well as Eleazar and Ithamar. We get the rest of the understanding of the various sons of the tribes here. These are those that Aaron and Moshe, to whom Yahuwah said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their hosts. These are they that spoke then to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring out these children of Israel from Mitzrayim. These are they, Moshe and Aaron. And it came to pass on that day when Yahuwah spoke to Moshe that he said, Ani Yahuwah, speak all of these things to Pharaoh that I'm going to tell you to speak. And again, Moshe asks the question, how is it that he is going to listen, hearken, shamar, hear and obey me, because I got these uncircumcised lips? All right, says verse 7, I've set you in the place, literally, of a mighty one to Pharaoh. But Aaron, your brother, is going to be the prophet for you. You speak what I command you, and Aaron, your brother, can speak to Pharaoh, and he will, well, no, it doesn't say this. It says, tell him that he will let the children of Israel go out of his hand, out of his land, and out of his hand. Now, what's interesting here is this next element. Verse 3 of chapter 7 says, famous words, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. And I'll multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Mitzrayim. So here's where we pause. And I'm going to suggest in verse 3 is kind of a capsule synopsis of so much that is important in this week's portion. Because what we see here is, probably one of the most important central questions in all of, certainly you'll hear the sages of Judaism say it. You'll hear it as well from the Calvinists and people in any of the variants of the Catholic universal Christian side of, that house. Does man have free will? Is everything preordained? And if it's all preordained and there's nothing we can do about it, well, then what's the point? So a central question. There's also this. He's going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Now, he doesn't say, I have hardened it already. This is a future tense thing. And we'll come back and we'll talk about the elements here. But this word harden in English is literally more than one word. It's two words, two different words in Hebrew. One of them that basically means to make stubborn, and the other one that means to strengthen. To, give someone strength, courage in their heart. And they're very, very different. But they both look similar, and they're both translated into English, kind of unfortunately, with this word harden. All right, it says, but Pharaoh too, just like the children of Israel, he ain't going to listen either. So I will lay my hand upon Mitzrayim, I'll bring forth my hosts, my people, B'nai Israel, up out of the land of Egypt via great judgments. And guess what? The Mitzrayites, the Egyptians too, shall know, ki ani Yahuwah, that I am when I stretch forth my hand and when I bring the children of Israel out from among them. Well, so Moshe and Aaron did as they were commanded, so did they. That's another one of those lines we're going to see over and over again throughout the story, and it's certainly important. And then we're told that Moshe was 80 years old. He was 80. Aaron was 3 years older. He was 83 when they spoke unto Pharaoh. Now, this is something I've mentioned a number of times. So does Scripture, and it certainly seems to be of vital importance. I've always found it kind of amazing. Moses, as you know, spends 40 years literally growing up in Egypt. He learns about Egyptian law and customs, probably a lot about their fake gods and so forth. He gets an understanding of his heritage, and then he basically leaves. And he spends 40 more years out in the wilderness in Midian. Gets himself a wife, a daughter of Jethro, and he has some sons, and then he encounters the burning bush. And at that point, he comes back, and we're going to begin the third phase of his life, probably the most important, the one that he's been prepared for all along, another 40 years of leading the people of Israel. So it's literally three different sets. It's learning about the world and the law and Egypt and the Hebrew understanding, first 40. The second 40, learning how to tend sheep. And that prepares him for the third 40, leading sheep. All right, Moshe then spoke. I'm sorry, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Aaron. He said the following. When Pharaoh speaks to you and says, show me a wonder. Well, you're going to tell him, and you'll tell Aaron in turn, take your rod, cast it down before Pharaoh, so it becomes a nachash, a serpent. And Moshe and Aaron went into Pharaoh. They did, as Yahuwah commanded. Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and his servants, and it did become a nechash. Now, one of the patterns that we're going to see here is going to play out at this point. And it's kind of fascinating to see the patterns within the patterns. You can probably, as we look back and as we look forward, you'll see a number of ways that you can divide all of these elements up. The miracles, the signs. The signs include what we're seeing here up front. Then later they're going to include the so-called plagues themselves. And of course we know that, there's 10 of them total, but it's really the last one, the death of the firstborn, is kind of set apart. It's really three sets of three. And what's fascinating is, if you look at the various scholarship midrashim studies on this, you'll see that there are all kinds of characteristics that repeat in cycles of three. And at least there's a whole bunch of different ways to divide these things up into various sets of three, and it's not always the same sets of three. Where is Pharaoh when they come to see him? Well, sometimes he's by the Nile, sometimes he's in public, in other words, and other times he's in private. There are elements about the plagues themselves. Sometimes they seem to have to do with things that are below. Other times there are things that are clearly above, up in the heavens, hail and so forth. And other times there are things that are in between, like things that fly and things that hop. So all kinds of ways of dividing this. Patterns within patterns. Well, here's one of the first of those patterns. Pharaoh, after seeing how Aaron's staff is cast on the ground, becomes a serpent, he calls for his wise men, the sorcerers, the scientists of the day, the magicians, it says, of Mitzrayim, and they did the very same thing with their so-called secret arts. They cast down, each one of them, their rod. They too became serpents. We got a problem here. Aaron's rod swallows up their rods. And then it says this, verse 13. And Pharaoh's heart, Chazak. Does that sound familiar? Chazak, chazak, chazak. Oh, yeah, be strong and of good courage. You know that. That's the word that we talk about frequently. It's a frequent commandment. Chazak, be strong and of good courage. Well, that's the same root that is used here. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. No, Pharaoh's heart was strong. Pharaoh, by the way, did it himself. He strengthened his own resolve. He strengthened his own heart. He didn't hearken to them. And that was exactly as Yod-Heh-Vav had already told him. He wasn't going to listen. And then Yahuwah said to Moshe, Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. It's rendered not as hardened here. It's rendered as stubborn, and that is a different word. Kabad. He refuses to let the people go. So we got Chazak and Kabad. All right, he says, go to Pharaoh in the morning when he goes out under the water, out to the Nile River. Stand by the river's bank, you go meet him, and that rod, which was turned into a serpent, you are to take that with you. Keep it in your hand. At this point, you will say to him, Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, has sent me to you. And he says the following, let my people go, so they can serve me in the wilderness. And listen, hey, be attentive here. Hitherto, you have not hearkened. You haven't heard and obeyed. So, thus says Yahuwah, in this you shall know, ki ani Yahuwah, that I am who I say I am, Yahuwah. Behold, I will smite with that same rod that's in my hand upon the waters that are in the river, and they will be turned into dam, lay dam to blood. Fish in the river are going to die. River will become foul. It'll stink. And the Egyptians will kind of have a regret. They're not going to be anxious to drink from it. So Yahuwah says to Moshe, now speak to Aaron, take your rod, stretch out your hand over the waters of the Nile River, over all, in fact, of the waters of Egypt, streams, ponds, pools, you name it, and they will all become blood. And there will be blood throughout the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. All right, first plague. I've already kind of alluded to this. Now we're talking about something which has a whole lot of symbolism. It's also something which is below. You look down to see the Dam, the blood, the Nile River, and the like. We know that there is a reference in all of the Torah to the fact that the life is in the blood. But ironically, this river, the river that they threw the babies into, or at least intended to, even with Moshe, it has been polluted. It certainly is a bloody river, if you think about it, isn't it? By the genocide of the young Hebrew male children. So much here. There's one other element that's going to become clear as well. In each case, these plagues, the three sets of three, are going to be specific, almost like he holds them up, he being the creator, one by one, and says, you think this is a god? You think the Nile River, in this first case, is a god? And it was one of the main things, right? The Nile was the source of literally life to the area. The floods came, and it watered the crops. The Nile dies, they die, and they know it. The Nile was a godlike thing. And what's happening here? The Creator is holding up the Nile River and saying, I can turn it to blood whenever I feel like it. You guys tried. I'm going to do it. So Moshe and Aaron did as Yahuwah commanded. He lifted up the rod, smote the waters, right there while Pharaoh was watching, and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river turned to blood. Fish died. River became foul. The people of Mitzrayim couldn't drink it. And there was blood and the water that had turned to blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, the magicians of Egypt, they said, well, we can do that too. Yeah. So they did in like manner with their secret arts. And it says, Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Does not give credit here. This is not the doing of Yah. This is Pharaoh who, again, and the root in the Hebrew here is, he made chatzach. He strengthened his heart. And he hearkened not, again, as Yahuwah had said. So Pharaoh turned away, went into his house. He didn't even lay this to heart. And the Egyptians, they started digging around the river. Let's see if we can't find some water to drink, because they couldn't drink out of the river. Nope, nothing there. 7 days were fulfilled after Yahuwah had smitten the river. Now finally he says, to Moshe, go on back into Pharaoh, tell him, thus says Yahuwah, let my people go so they can serve me, and if you refuse to let them go, I'm not done. I'm going to smite all your borders with Zephardim, with frogs. And the river will swarm with frogs. They'll come up, they'll go in your house, they'll go in your bedchamber, your bed, houses, your servants and people, into your ovens, your kneading troughs, you name it, there'll be frogs there. And they'll be all over the place, upon you and upon your people and upon your servants. Now, at this point, Yahuwah says to Moshe, all right, you tell Aaron, right? He each time is going to tell Aaron, I'm going to tell you what to do. You tell Aaron, and here's what's going to happen. Stretch forth your hand with that rod over the rivers, canals, pools, and frogs will come up upon the land of Mitzrayim. So Aaron did it, stretched out his hand, and the frogs came up, and they literally covered the land. The magicians, well, we can make frogs too. You don't have enough frogs? We'll give you some more frogs. They, in like manner, did with their secret arts, and behold, they brought frogs up from the land, and there were more frogs. Now, Pharaoh called for Moshe and Aaron, and he said, all right, okay, you talk to Yahuwah, entreat him for me. Tell him to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may sacrifice to Yahuwah. Now, this is kind of fascinating, and it's an interesting place where, yes, there's a famous song. We'll probably play it tonight later on. One More Night with the Frogs. Okay, because at this point, Moshe says to Pharaoh, all right, you got a time in mind here, Pharaoh? At what time shall I pray and entreat for you and your servants and for your people that the frogs be destroyed from among you and from among your houses and remain only where they belong? Out there in the river. Now, there's some interesting Rashiisms on this and some interesting observations you can make with respect to the use of the lay prefix here as opposed to other ways that this could be interpreted. But it's really, Moshe is telling Pharaoh, you tell me the time that you want me to pray for. And you would think, and it would seem that maybe this is part of the key, you would think that Pharaoh would say, I just send these frogs be gone immediately. Like, how about 10 minutes ago? Is that okay? But that's not what he says. Now, maybe there's a game of one-upsmanship, brinksmanship, chess being played here. Maybe Pharaoh is testing Moshe and saying, okay, look, he knows that the frog's going to be gone pretty soon. Whenever it is that Pharaoh thinks the frogs are going to be gone, he wants to ask for a different time, right? And so he says, have them be gone. You pray for them to be gone tomorrow. Moses is nonplussed. All right, be it according to your word, so you may know that there is no one like unto Yahuwah. The frogs will depart from you, from your houses, and your servants, your people. They'll remain in the river only. Moshe and Aaron went out, and Moshe cried up to Yahuwah concerning those frogs that he'd brought on down, and Yahuwah did as Moshe had prayed. Frogs died out of the houses, courts, and out of the fields, and they gathered them together in heaps, and the land literally stank. Pharaoh seems to have changed his mind. When he saw that there was, in fact, a respite, well, he again, wait a second, hardened his heart. But if you look into Hebrew, no, he didn't harden his heart. He made it stubborn in this case. Hakabod, his heart. And he again did not hearken. He did not listen and obey. And that too was, as Yahuwah has already said, was going to happen. So now he says to him, stretch out your rod. Tell this to Aaron. Smite the dust of the earth that it can become kin. Now, some question about how that's really translated. You'll see it as gnats. You'll see it as lice. You'll hear it sometimes referred to, if you go down south in Latin American countries, they call them no-see-ums. Little teeny bugs you just plain can't see, but they're irritating. It's not clear exactly what they're what these things are, these kin, but there's a whole lot of them, kinim, and they're tiny and they're small and they're like the dust and they cover everything. Well, they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand, smote the dust of the earth. There were gnats all over the place. Upon man and beast, the dust of the earth became gnats throughout all of Egypt. Now, here is where the plot thickens a little bit. We keep talking about these patterns within patterns. And this is a pattern essentially of from the third through the last seven. Because up until now, we see if you didn't have enough frogs, we got some magicians. They can make some more. But now the magicians try this with the kin, with the lice, with the gnats. They brought forth, or they tried with their secret arts to bring forth more gnats. You got to wonder, every time I read through this, I think, come on, folks, what is the point here? Yeah, they want to show that they can do it. Anything you can do, I can do better. But it's not like you don't have enough of these things, not enough frogs, not enough gnats. You want more. But in this case, I guess maybe it's a mixed blessing. They failed. They could not produce more gnats. And now they are convinced. And this is one of those things, once convinced, they seem to stay convinced. The magicians now realize something is going on here that they can't duplicate and they can't explain. It's kind of like when science falls up short. We don't have a plan for this one. So they said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of Elohim." Now, one of the things that we cannot prove from Scripture, but I tend to think from reading through this and, you know, picturing the human nature and some of the things we see, and we know that there's going to be a mixed multitude that eventually leaves Mitzrayim along with Moshe. In other words, it's not just the B'nai Israel. There are others. There are Egyptian peoples that come out with them. And I can't help but think that we see the seeds of that right here. That perhaps some of these magicians at this point become converts, if you will. And they realize that, these various gods, so-called gods of Egypt, and one by one they're being shown for what they are, subservient to the one true, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So maybe the Egyptians get the message, at least among the magicians first, and later among others. This is the finger of God. Pharaoh, though, nope, he makes his heart stubborn. He didn't listen. So Yahuwah says to Moshe, get up early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh. Now Pharaoh, here's a repeating pattern. He's going to be back this time at the water. So say to him, thus says Yahuwah, let my people go so they can serve me. And if you won't, here's what's going to happen this time. Going to get other swarms, slightly bigger insects, flies. And literally here in the Hebrew, it seems like the word is ha-arov. Ha-arov. Swarms. The word, as near as I can tell, literally just translates as swarms. You're going to get swarms. They're going to be all over the place too. All the usual places. On the people, on the servants, in the houses. The houses will be full of them, these swarms. Presumably flies. And on the ground too. And here is another interesting and slight change. Within the patterns and the repeating patterns, we've now seen the first break with the last plague of gnats. Magicians can't duplicate. We're going to get another break in the pattern here, a new pattern, and that's the following. I will sever, he says. I'm going to set apart. Now, in this case, the root is the pe lamed he. You could pronounce it as, it's ve hif liti. I'm going to set apart, sever in that day, the land of Goshen, where all of the sons of Israel are dwelling, so that the swarms of flies are not going to be up there. Hereafter, we're going to see he makes this division. So this is the plague at which we see the division take place. I will sever, set apart, my people in the land of Goshen. No flies there. So that you, and then who are they talking to? They're talking to Pharaoh. So that you may know, ki ani Yahuwah, in the midst of Haaretz, the earth. And then verse 19. This one is kind of fascinating, too. He's already said he's going to sever and set apart, but now we're going to get a different word. I will put a division. It's pedut in the Hebrew. I'm going to put a pedut, a division, between my people and your people. By tomorrow, and hereafter, you notice, he's sticking to Pharaoh's pattern. You ask for it tomorrow, that's what's going to happen tomorrow now. You ask for it, you're going to get it. But I put a division, pedut, between my people and your people tomorrow. Now, the root here of that word padut is kind of fascinating because it also has to do not only with just a division, but with the idea of a verb to redeem or to ransom. As in the reference that also permeates this entire parsha and indeed the story about the ransom, the redemption of the firstborn. So here we see that word kind of play a central role at the point and when this division occurs, this severing. And it has to do with redemption of the firstborn. It has to do with redeeming his people, Israel too, which of course is the firstborn. And we know that there are other references in that regard throughout the rest of the scriptures. All right, Yahuwah did so. Lots and lots of flies, lots of swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, his servants' houses, whole land of Ephraim filled up with these swarms. And the word here that it's used is literally it's ruined. They made a mess out of the land. So Pharaoh calls for Moshe and Aaron. He says, all right, go sacrifice to your Elohim in the land. Well, at this point, Moshe says, you know, that's not really appropriate. Because shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to Yahuwah our El? Look, if we sacrifice the abominations of the Egyptians before their eyes, won't they get angry? Won't they stone us? We need to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to Yahuwah our El as he shall command us. Well, Pharaoh's nonplussed. I'll let you go, he says. You can do that. Go sacrifice to your El Yahuwah in the wilderness. Just don't go too far away. Ask him how that's going to play. And Moshe says, well, okay, behold, I'm going to go out from you, and I'm going to entreat Yahuwah that the swarms of flies will in fact depart from you, Pharaoh, from your people. Tomorrow, remember, that's your pattern, tomorrow. Only just don't let Pharaoh be dealing any more deceitfully with us. Changing your mind, like we saw recently here. Let the people go. So, in fact, that's what happened. Moshe went out from Pharaoh. He entreated Yahuwah. And Yahuwah did as Moshe had entreated him. He removed the swarms of flies from his servants' people. Not a single fly remained. That's quite an amazing feat, right? But Pharaoh, it says, what? He stubbornized his heart. He made it kabod. Again, he didn't let the people go. Hardened, he made it stubborn. And that brings us to kind of the last chapter here where we're going to really see how all of this plays out. At this point, we're going to see the end of the Torah portion. We got several more plagues to go. We'll talk about those next week. Then says Yahuwah to Moshe, go to Pharaoh, tell him, thus says Yahuwah, Elohim of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. And if you refuse still, and you still hang on to them, behold, the hand of Yahuwah is now going to be upon the cattle which are in the field, the horses, the asses, the camels, the herds, flocks, and it's going to be a nasty situation indeed. Now, as we saw in the last plague, Yahuwah is again going to cause this division, to make a distinction, a separation, between the cattle of Israel, the sons thereof, and the cattle of Mitzrayim. Nothing will die that belongs to the children of Israel. And Yahuwah appointed a set time saying, right, tomorrow Yahuwah will do this thing in the land. And he indeed did it. In the morning, all the cattle of Egypt died. But out of the children of Israel, not one. Now this time Pharaoh sent, behold, check it out, not so much as one of the cattle of the Israelites was dead. You'd think this would be a pretty good message, but it says, the heart of Pharaoh was what? Stubborn. Still, kabod, and he didn't let the people go. So Yahuwah says to Moshe and Aaron, get yourself handfuls of soot from the furnace. And in the sight of Pharaoh, you throw this up into the heavens. And this now will become like small dust over all of the land of Mitzrayim, and it will bring forth boils and blains, breaking forth on man and upon beast throughout the land of Mitzrayim. So they did as commanded. They took some soot from the furnace. They stood before Pharaoh. Moses threw it up towards the heavens, and it became a boil, breaking forth with blains upon man and beast. Now, notice, folks, here's another one of those places where we're seeing this pattern. And at this point, I'd say there's one other element that we're going to see. And it now seems to be more clear. Yes, we have things below, things above, and things in between. We have things that affect beasts. We have things that affect man directly in the way of pain and ailments. We have things that affect blood. And ultimately, yes, each of these things is a direct attack on the so-called gods, the mighty ones that Mitzrayim, that Egypt holds dear. And finally, there's this too. Basically, he's pretty well getting almost every sphere of human endeavor. In other words, whether we're talking animals, whether we're talking people's bodies, whether we're talking the land, the things that they see around them, we're going to get some indications even of things that come from the heavens in the way of hailstones in the future. We get some indication that the creator of the universe, Ani Yahuwah, is in fact superior to and master of all of these things. All right, well, it says the magicians, they couldn't even stand before Moshe because all the boils. Boils were upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. And now at this point, we're going to get what? One more break, one more new addition to the continuing pattern. Because now, for the first time in all of this, back to this issue of free will, the first time we see it is Yahuwah, it says. Ve Yitzchazach, and he strengthened, who did? Yahuwah. Et Lev, he strengthened Pharaoh's heart. And he hearkened not to them, again, as Yahuwah had spoken to Moshe. Now, what's kind of fascinating about this, back to this issue of free will, Pharaoh's had a free will. A friend of mine used to explain it in his teachings. Oh, you know, essentially this is kind of like the old thing of dancing with the bear. You decide to dance with the bear decides when the dance is over. So Pharaoh made his bed, now he's going to lie in it. Up until this point, Pharaoh has had free will. But maybe he would have caved at this point. And Yahuwah is not, in fact, taking away his free will. He's just given him some strength of heart to follow through with the plan that he has already embarked upon. Right? Pharaoh's, he wants to go this way, and he said he's going to continue, pursue it to the bitter end, and he was fixing to cave, but at this point, Yah basically says, okay, I'm going to strengthen your heart for you. You want to go this way? Keep on. So, at this point, Yahuwah says unto Moshe, rise up early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh, say unto him, thus says Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Elohim of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. And for this time, I'm going to send all of my plagues upon your person. But really, if you look in the Hebrew, it's kind of interesting here. That word there, again, is lev. Upon your heart. Which is kind of a, I guess that's a Hebrew metaphor. It's your heart that was strengthened, your heart that was fixing to get weak, and he made it strong, and now it's going to be upon your heart that these plagues are going to come. Oh, and your servants and your people, so that you may know there ain't nothing. There is no one like me in all of Haaretz, all the earth. Now, surely now, I'd put forth my hand, I've smitten you and your people with pestilence, and you had been cut off from the earth. I gave you a chance, in other words. But in very deed for this cause, I have made you to stand, to show you my power, that my name may be declared throughout the earth. And yet, you still, you humble dude, you, right? You exalt yourself against my people, and you won't let them go. So, behold, again, he's rubbing it in. Tomorrow, about this time, I'm going to cause it to rain. A real hailstorm, like the likes of which you ain't never seen before, dude. Such as has never been seen in Egypt since the day it was founded, not up until now. So, send, hasten even. Get your cattle in. All your cattle, everything you got in the field that is still alive, every man and beast that is found in the field that doesn't come in, will die. Will be killed by the hailstones. Now, at this point, we see this indication, too. This is a bit of a change. Those people that feared the word of Yahuwah, they've had a chance. They've been watching. You know, this is not the first plague. This is not the first rodeo. And the magicians figured it out a while back. They can't duplicate these late things. People that are watching, you know, they turn out the evening news. Moses is on TV again telling them, here's what's going to happen tomorrow. And a lot of folks are probably saying, you know, I think I better pay attention to this guy. He says, bring the cattle in, get your servants in, don't be out in the hail. Seems like good advice. So there were those that did, in fact, fear the word of Yahuwah. And among the servants of Pharaoh and his cattle, there were some that said, oh yeah, get them on indoors. He that didn't regard the word of Yahuwah left his servants and his cattle in the field. And you can guess how that's going to turn out, right? Yahuwah then says to Moshe, stretch out your hand towards heaven. Here comes the hail. Man upon beast and upon every herb in the field throughout the land of Egypt. So, Moshe did. He stretched his rod. Yahuwah sent down thunder and hail and fire. And hail rained upon the land of Mitzrayim. And there was hail and fire flashing up amidst it. Very grievous, the kind of stuff that no one had seen in all the land of Mitzrayim since it became, well, a place that anybody remembered. There is another indication here that I think is kind of fascinating. How often do you think of seeing fire and ice together, right? What is generally understood by those that have, you know, various mythological or pagan studies and under their belt is that these are considered to be opposing gods, fire and ice. Fire melts ice, and ice melts and puts out fire. So it's almost like what we're seeing here is a battle of the fake deities at the hand of the real one. Well, the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt, man and beast. It smote every herb in the field. It broke all of the trees. And only, of course, up where there was this division that had been made, Atlantic Ocean, children of Israel were there. No hail up there. So Pharaoh sent. This time he calls again for Moshe and Aaron. He says, look, I have sinned. Oh, really? This time you guys got me. Ah, okay. Yahuwah is righteous, and me and my people, we are in fact wicked. So here you could say, yeah, he gets it. Entreat Yahuwah, he says, and let there be enough of these mighty thunderings and hail. I'll let you go. You will stay no longer. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, we'll see. Moshe said unto him, soon as I'm gone out of the city, I'll spread forth my hands. Notice the difference? Soon as I'm gone out of the city, I'll spread forth my hand. The thunders will cease no more, no more hail, and you will know that the earth is, in fact, Yahuwah's. Now, as for you and your servants, I know, I have it on good authority, that you are not yet ready to fear Yahuwah Eloheka. Flax and the barley were smitten. The barley was in the ear. The flax was in the bloom. This is one of those things that's going to become key as we look ahead to this idea of Pesach. In what stage were the various crops, in other words, and how much damage did they suffer based on how far along were they? But the wheat and the spelt, they were not smitten because they ripened later on. So Moshe went forth out of the city from Pharaoh. He spread forth his hands to Yahuwah, and the thunders and the hail ceased. Rain stopped pouring upon the earth. Pharaoh sees, look at that, no more rain, no more hail, no more thunder. And he sinned yet more. Now notice this time he again makes stubborn. He kabodizes. How's that for twisting the hero? The Hebrew. He does it to himself. He doesn't strengthen. He hardens. He stubborns his own heart. He and his servants. And then the next verse, and indeed this is the last verse in the Parsha, kind of a fitting way to wrap it up as we basically are not quite through with the plagues yet, says, and the heart of Pharaoh was kazak, was strong. And he did not let the children of Israel go. Now, I want to pause here and just make one more observation, because I've got a little note in my margin, and this is one of those things that sometimes you have to read it several times and kind of get the patterns and the patterns within the patterns. You notice before, first time we saw the reference to these two verbs, to make strong a heart and to make stubborn a heart, it was in the opposite order. Pharaoh's heart was first strong, and then it was stubborn. And in this case, his heart is still stubborn, and then it is told to us that it is strong. But in any case, he is in a world of hurt. He did not let the children of Israel go, as Yahuwah had spoken by Moshe. So over and over again, we're seeing this consistent pattern. It's the patterns here to me that are kind of the most fascinating. And, you know, each year I make similar comments about this portion and others. You go through these things and you see things that you hadn't noticed before. But the more you study it, the more you recognize it, the more you put the other pieces from Scripture together and you see the bookends and we look ahead to what will happen in the future. And I contend there are elements of these patterns we are seeing play out. And more particularly and more importantly, I think there'll come a time when we're going to see a very specific, I'm not sure exactly how it'll play out. Probably there's a way if we were studious enough to get some clues. But we're going to see these patterns repeat. If I had to guess, I'd say they're going to be 10 plagues, going to be three sets of three plus one. They'll look like bookends. There'll be some mirror image symmetry along several axes here. And we're probably going to see some similar patterns with respect to people who don't get it. People who begin to get it throughout the system, people who will come to him, and people who will keep their stubborn hearts strengthened up until the point where basically they don't have the ability to make that choice anymore.